Americans delight in lists, and 70 years ago today, a radio show began that made the most of that obsession to quantify popular culture. Your Hit Parade began on April 20th, 1935, on NBC. Some 50 years after the show ended, the phrase persists.
Every Saturday night for 24 years, Your Hit Parade featured a small stock company singing the week's most popular songs. The premise was simple, and the show might still be on the air, according to critic John McDonough. That's if music were still about songs.
The Hit Parade began its run on a high note. Here were some of the songs on that first show. You probably know them today.
Come on along and listen to the lullaby of Broadway.
Lovely to look at, delightful to know.
I won't die, don't ask me. I won't die, don't ask me.
It's easy to remember, but so hard to forget.
When I grow too old to do.
The country was whistling the tunes of Rodgers and Hart, Jerome Kern, Sigmund Romberg, and Duke Ellington. Aside from writing hits, they had one other thing in common. None of them had the temerity to sing their own tunes. But I'll come back to that thought later. The Hit Parade was conceived and produced by the ad agency for the American Tobacco Company, whose biggest brand was Lucky Strike cigarettes. Lucky's would stick by the show to the end. This is what it sounded like in 1935, at the beginning.
Lucky Strike presents the Hit Parade. For the next hour, the manufacturers of Lucky Strike cigarettes will bring you the 15 most popular songs of this week, played by Lenny Hayton and his Lucky Strike Orchestra, and sung by Lucky's own group of soloists.
At first, the singers were barely mentioned on the program. They weren't important because the songs were the stars. As they jockeyed for favor and position, the Hit Parade became a kind of weekly Olympiad of melody. Every Saturday night, it combined the suspense of a contest with the certainty of statistics, and promised America a weekly snapshot of its own changing, elusive, collective self. The Hit Parade liked to think of itself as the voice of the people in action.
Once again, the voice of the people has spoken in selecting the tunes for the Hit Parade. New Yorkers and Californians, Northerners and Southerners, Republicans, Democrats, men, women, and children, 120 million of you have told us what songs you want to hear this Saturday night. You've told us by your purchases of sheet music and records, by your requests to orchestra leaders at places you dance, by the tunes you listen to on favorite radio programs. That's why the Hit Parade is your own program.
If you listen through the populist rhetoric, you'll hear some instructive facts about how the business of music operated. To understand what made the Hit Parade work, you have to completely reimagine the nature of what popular music was and how it was marketed. Downloading didn't exist, and even records were not especially important. Trade publications like Billboard, which had been ranking songs since 1913, didn't even list records until the 40s. The song was the basic product. Everything else was just one more way to spread the tune around. Singers and bandleaders were the main carriers. There was also sheet music, jukeboxes, dance halls, nightclubs, movies, and above all, live radio performances. At the command center of all this were the music publishers. They were the arbiters who picked and then plugged the tunes as far and wide as possible. If they did their job well, by the time a song reached the Hit Parade, virtually every singer and bandleader in the country was singing the same tune. A hit rarely belonged to a single artist as it does today. Here's an example.
Here's a tune that's up among the leaders in third place. The title song from the motion picture, Alexander's Ragtime Band.
Everybody knew this one, of course, but no one owned it, except maybe Irving Berlin. But performing his own songs was not his job. Few listeners would have bothered to split hairs between this version by Al Goodman or this one by Benny Goodman. Not even the clout of a big star could stake a proprietary claim on a hot song. Here's another Berlin tune that was everywhere in 1938.
Number four. The motion picture Carefree provides the tune that's making its fourth Lucky Strike appearance. In fourth place this week, Change Partner.
Must you dance every dance?
By the time Buddy Clark did it on the Hit Parade, Change Partners had a life of its own that didn't necessarily include the man for whom it was written, Fred Astaire. The hit parade didn't even change a stair's key.
Partner, and dance with me. Must you dance?
Because the show measured only songs and not records, it's ironic that some of the most famous records of all time never made the hit parade. Artie Shaw's Begin the Begin was one, Tommy Dorsey's Marie was another. Perhaps they never developed a broad enough performance base to penetrate the survey, or maybe the sponsor just didn't like them. The show's survey methods were notoriously secretive and occasionally arbitrary. Still, as the hit parade moved into the war years, it became a weekly diary of national emotions. Faith, fury, separation, and longing.
The hit paraders rally round Barry Wood to sing, "Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition."
When the lights go on again.
Here's the song that America rates 8 from the top tonight, "Coming In on a Wing and a Prayer."
Number 3, "I'll Be Seeing You." The hit paraders are in with the song that's number 8, "You'll Never Know." Your new ninth place favorite. They're either too young or too old.
If the prevailing rule was that the song was the king and not the singer, the exception to the rule came in February 1943, when a 28-year-old former band singer named Frank Sinatra joined the permanent hit parade cast.
This is Martin Block, ready to bring you the rest of your hit parade with Ethel Smith, the hit paraders, Mark Warnow and the Lucky Strike Orchestra, the boy whose voice is thrilling millions, Frank Sinatra. And
Sinatra would become the big bang of popular music during his hit parade run. Sometimes you could hear the fireworks popping off as he sang.
There's no need to tell me now what makes the world go round.
Those squeals may originally have been a public relations plant, but the young fans lost no time in picking up the cue. Sinatra also became the first regular member of a hit parade cast to be able to sing his own hit record on the show.
Your hit parade gets going with the week's Lucky Seven tune, because Frank Sinatra sings America's seventh place winner, "All or Nothing at All."
All or nothing at all.
It was a moment the show would not see again until 1955, when Giselle McKenzie moonlighted her way to the top with a tune called "Hard to Get." By then, Your Hit Parade had moved into television and become one of the top-rated shows of the decade. Broadcasting live from NBC's famous Studio 8H, all the signature elements remained intact, even those swirling sweeps of the harp. But now there were pictures, dancers, and a new theme behind the familiar voice of André Baroush.
Your Hit Parade. The top tunes all over America, as determined by Your Hit Parade survey, which checks the bestsellers in sheet music and phonograph records, the songs most heard on the air, and the songs most played on the automatic coin machines. An accurate, authentic tabulation of America's taste in popular music. Your Hit Parade.
Well into the mid-50s, the show's ratings kept it consistently near the top of television's own hit parade. With a stable cast for nearly 5 years, the show became more of an institution than ever.
And now, the top seven songs of the week, with Dorothy Collins, Snooky Lanson, Giselle McKenzie, Russell Arms, the Hit Paraders and Dancers, and Raymond Scott and the Hit Parade Orchestra.
But something was quietly happening in music that the Hit Parade survey was missing. Beneath the surface, the process of promoting a hit was shifting away from the music publishers and toward record producers and disc jockeys. Records meant that hits were becoming increasingly tied to individual artists and performances. The hit parade might have survived if enough good tunes had come along, but in 1955, the American songbook was about to be challenged from below by a rudimentary folk form called the blues.
And off we go with survey song number 7. Giselle McKenzie, the hit paraders and dancers, are rejuvenated by the number 7 tune, "Dance With Me, Henry."
This was one of the first. It was a commercialized cover of Etta James's R&B tune, "Work With Me, Annie." Within a year, the hit parade singers would be faced with "Rock Around the Clock," "Blue Suede Shoes," and "Hound Dog." They were all simple 12-bar blues, and they were all fundamentally the same. For a program designed to showcase songs, that would be a problem. The blues didn't pretend to be traditional songwriting. A blues was either a performance or it was nothing at all.
You gotta dance with me, Henry.
All right, baby.
Dance with me, Henry.
Don't sing, baby.
Rock with me, Henry.
Any old time.
About the same time music discovered its roots, My Fair Lady opened on Broadway. The American song still had momentum, but it was no match for the raw power of rock and roll. Soon it would take popular music to a place where the hit parade could not follow. It was a place where authenticity was valued over artifice, where singers would become their own songwriters and vice versa, where only the author would have the authority to render the authentic version, where the performance would become the central product and the song an accessory, or worse, a statement. 9 years ago, in the New York Times Magazine, critic Jesse Green wrote an article called Who Killed the Great American Song? 2 weeks later, a young letter writer responded with this. Perhaps I'm just a child of my generation, she wrote, but I would far rather hear Chris Isaak, Nick Cave, or Dwight Yoakam lament the loss of something personal and real than hear any performer of classical standards interpret someone else's cleverly intellectualized take on those same feelings. It could have been an epitaph for your hit parade. Today, Russell Arms, the surviving member of the television cast, remembers what it was like to be caught in a revolution.
Rock and roll was the demise of the hit parade, because how many weeks in a row can you do, well, Blue Suede Shoes or, any of the three-chord guitar songs that were on, because some of them were really, really pretty bad. We knew it right away. The performers knew it, and the production people knew it. Toward the end of the program of the hit parade being on the air, it was kind of a tug of war between rock and good songs, Broadway show songs, just good song that came along.
Actually, there would be some pretty good songs to come, but not enough to save your hit parade. It went off the air for good in April 1959. For NPR News, this is John McDonough.
John McDonough is a contributing editor for Downbeat magazine and an independent radio producer.